Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Most everything sucks. I'm going to have to cut down on the lemonade. It's too much sugar. So, diet, green tea, but citrus flavored. So, basically the same thing. Pretty good. Pretty good. Not very sour, but, you know, I don't need any extra sour power tonight. I got enough to get us through the stuff that I'm going to yell about. And I don't need anything to make me sour about the end of the show, because that's the greatest fucking thing I've ever seen. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. But let's start out with the beginning of the show, which is a Jimmy Uso promo, you know, where he rehashes the shit that happened last week, in case you didn't see it. And then he talks about how, you know, they would have won if Roman hadn't interfered and stay out of our business and stuff like that. Very simple boilerplate stuff, and Jimmy does it great. And the big thing you got to think about, the tagline of the whole deal is, I am my brother's keeper, not you. There you go. Yes, Jay may be Roman's blood, his cousin, but Jimmy and Jay are twin brothers, and that loyalty should matter more. Is, I think, Jimmy's general thesis. And I'm inclined to agree with him. I am. So there you go. After this promo, Roman's like, "This, he's not my brother. This is your brother. Nobody's going to confuse me with him. Nobody's going to look at me and think, I'm that guy." People are looking at him thinking, is that Jey Uso embarrassing the family? I'll bet it is. They look so much alike. It must be Jey Uso embarrassing the family. Do you want people to think that's you out there embarrassing the family? You better go talk to your brother. And so Jey goes talks to Jimmy, and it's a very good scene backstage. Where Jimmy's like, you're pissed we got DQ'd by Roman too. Because Jimmy's like, I'll bet you DQ'd us on purpose because you're jealous. I don't know about that, but he's got a point, I suppose. You just couldn't see us shining because it would take some of the shine away from you, so you had to stop us. Roman did it because he thought you were going to lose and he didn't want you to embarrass the family. That's why he did it. But, yeah. Jay's like, yes, I'm pissed that Roman got us DQ'd. Well, then what are we going to do about it? And it's just Jimmy yelling at Jay for a while. And then Jay goes, what do you want me to do? He gets really intense. What do you want me to do, man? You've been gone for a whole year. My loyalty is with the tribal chief now, Ayus. I'm not doing it justice. Like, Jay does a great job of being completely caught in the middle and literally having no idea what to do. And he's it's a cry for help, man. He is screaming at his brother, help me. I can't make the decision for myself. I'm too far gone. I'm in too deep. And Jimmy's like, you know what? If Roman wants to talk to me, I'll be hanging out in our locker room. And then I start to question, who gets their own locker room? Because you always hear about locker room leaders, the guys who are there to like keep everybody pumped up or whatever. And that's like for real. I think most people have share a communal locker room. Maybe occasionally you'll have some diva who's, you know, or somebody who's way big time who's got their own locker room. But it's funny that in kayfabe, everybody's got a private dressing room. I don't understand why Jimmy would have one currently. He's not a champ right now, and he's only been back for a little while. Were they keeping one warm for him? Jay doesn't need his own locker room. He dresses in Roman's locker room. That's part of the perks of being a member of the tribe. So, this is starting the Roman Reigns saga for the evening. And the Roman telenovela, the soap opera that is As the Roman Turns, is the best thing that WWE has going for it right now. And we're starting to move toward something. There's been some backlash against the storyline. That nothing really happens, and it's mostly the same thing over and over again. And I think a lot of people just are upset. There's nobody there to really build to take the title off of Roman. I mean, you got a heel champion who's as strong as Roman. They need to build a babyface to come in there and take it off of him. And that's not Roman's fault. WWE just sucks at building babyfaces. I think they actually did a great job of building KO into that guy who could have taken it off of him. And also Daniel Bryan. But it was too early in the process. They didn't have anybody else that they could like, hey, this guy has been pretty hot. Let's give him to Roman. So Roman can squash him. It's like, oh shit. Well, we'll sacrifice this baby face to Roman. The shit they're doing with Rey now, if they had done that around the time they were doing it with KO, it would work better. Because they did a lot with the storyline to make you really root for Kevin Owens and want him to get one over on Roman. But you knew in your heart it was way too early in Roman's reign. Roman Reigns' reign, for him to lose the title. So you're watching it going, well, KO's not winning this. And now when it might be closer to the time where you think it might happen, they're doing the stupid thing with Rey Mysterio. Well, there's no fucking way they're taking the title off of Roman and putting it on a Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio with this storyline? Nah, sorry. So yeah, I'll talk more about that at the end. The biggest problem the WWE has is they can't figure out how to book an over babyface. They rely on our past connections with Kevin Owens to get him there. And Daniel Bryan is the only super over mega babyface they've ever really been able to book in the last, what, 5 years? Longer than that? Because when he was over, that's 7 years ago now. So last decade. Last decade is Daniel Bryan, and that's it. And also, the irony thing was that he was also turned out to be a fantastic heel. So he doesn't have to wear baby saves. Because it's easier to get over as a heel in WWE because they don't fucking make you an idiot. Sometimes they make you a chicken shit, but not an idiot, usually. Unless you're Baron Corbin. What? What's his name? So I want to make sure I've got the date correct, and I want to make sure I count the days. Okay. So hold on while I Google something. All right. So today is (clears throat) May 22nd. Well, I don't know what the date is. What was the date that happened? Huh. Not really sure what day this was. Well, let me look at this. I'm sorry that I'm doing this live on the air. I meant to do it ahead of time, but I didn't. My fault. Yeah. May 21st. It was June 11th episode yesterday. So May 21st, you'll all remember this. At the end of at the end of SmackDown, the main event on the May 21st episode of SmackDown was Four Corners Fatal Four Way Intercontinental Title Match. Featuring the champion, Apollo Crews, and the challengers, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Big E. Big E looked set to win the Intercontinental title back from the man who took it from him, Apollo Crews. However, the lights went down and a fog drifted in over the stage, and emerging from the fog was a tattooed man wearing a sleeveless hoodie. And that man emerging from the fog was Aleister Black, returning for the first time in 7 months to in-ring action of any kind. He'd had several weeks of vignettes, heavily produced vignettes. He walked into that ring, and while Big E was being held down by Apollo, his legs being held by Apollo, Aleister Black delivered his signature move, his finisher, a spinning back heel kick known as the Black Mass, knocking out Big E, costing him the Intercontinental title. And then he receded back into the fog, and we've never seen him since. And up until last night, we hadn't seen Big E since. So, let's just go through. That happened on the May 21st episode. The May 28th episode, nothing. By the May 4th episode, Aleister Black had been released from the company, fired. And now we have the May 11th episode. So the June 11th episode. June 4th, June 11th. Last night, Kevin Owens and Big E took on Apollo Crews and Sami Zayn in a tag team match. It was the first time we had seen Big E since Aleister Black kicked him in the face and cost him the Intercontinental title. Did they mention that at all? No. How could they? They fired the guy who emerged from the fog and kicked him in the face. I mean, I don't know. Is that episode on Peacock? I know it takes a few weeks for certain episodes, once they've aired on Fox or USA, Raw or SmackDown, I know it takes a few weeks for them to wind up on the network. But I don't know, is it the same with the cock? Because I'm wondering if they just cut that part out. Because that's what they did. They tried to retcon a whole ass person. They said Aleister Black never fucking existed. He didn't exist. Don't believe your lying eyes, said the charlatan to the townsfolk. What you thought you saw never actually happened. In fact, Aleister Black was a figment of your imagination. I actually saw somebody operating the official Twitter account of a very popular wrestling news site say, "It's good to see Big E back, but are they really going to rekindle this feud between him and Apollo? Shouldn't he move on to something else by now?" And my thought was, well, they were gonna do that because he was about to win the Intercontinental title, and then a man emerged from the fog, a tattooed man who kicked him in the face. I wonder whatever happened with that. Imagine you're one of the people, these coveted casuals that they talk about. People who don't have Twitter. They don't subscribe to the Wrestling Observer. They don't go online and look up and see what happened to people. Like, I know they say, like, they have the official Twitter thing of WWE, who says, we have agreed to depart ways with the following superstars. We risk them the best in their future endeavors. But what if you're not online? What if you're a kid? You know, we like kids. Watch the show, kids. What if you're somebody, you know, because they really want to get that 18 to 49 demo, but there's a lot of people who fall outside that range on the upper end. People who watched wrestling their whole lives and still watch it. Apparently, there's a whole bunch of people in their 50s and 60s who love watching wrestling. Do you think they're on Twitter? Do you think they know what's going on? No. All they remember is a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago to be exact, Aleister Black came back and kicked Big E's face off and cost him the Intercontinental title match. 3 weeks later, Big E's back and they don't even mention it. Do you think those people are confused? Do you think you're gaslighting them and trying to make them believe that what they saw never actually happened? Yeah. Whether it's intentional or not, you are basically calling hundreds of thousands of people who watch your product crazy. You didn't see what you thought you saw. Shh, shh, go to sleep, Grandpa. It's fine. The fuck are you doing? This was the problem that was immediately evident when releasing a guy, not before they did it, after they did the big return angle, which was obviously going to kickstart a huge feud between one of the most popular baby faces in the company and a returning heel, repackaged, slightly repackaged. Well, you did that, and now what? Well, apparently now what is, pay no attention to that thing you all saw, Big E's feuding with Apollo Crews still. But the whole point of Aleister Black attacking Big E was that Big E could move on from Apollo Crews and into a feud with somebody else. So none of that's going to happen. He's just going to stick around and keep wrestling Apollo Crews? What? Okay. And how do I know that? Because they already booked another match. This match doesn't matter. Who fucking cares? The whole thing is a goddamn lie. The good guys win. Big E and Apollo Crews. Did Apollo get pinned or did Sami Zayn? I don't fucking care. Do you care? Why? Well, you shouldn't. All I know is that after the match, Apollo Crews blamed the loss of his team on Sami Zayn. The only reason I lost is because I was saddled with Sami Zayn, this idiot, Yeah, there you go. Oh, yeah. So KO, I remember this now. KO dodges a Huluva kick and hits Sammy with a stunner. So Cruz says, next week I want a rematch. The two of you against me. And Commander Aziz. Like, the pause is so long. It's unnecessarily long. It's really stupid. I don't think it was Apollo's fault. I think they told him to pause for a really long time. They paused for such a long time that it was like, next week, I want a rematch. The two of you against me. And the pause was so long that after the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 seconds, you have KO at the top of the ramp going, and who else? Did you forget your line? And then Apollo's like, and my commander, Aziz. And then Sami Zayn gets on the mic and he's pissed. He says, oh, it's not my fault. I don't even blame me. And then Aziz gives him a Nigerian nail. So Cruz taunts Sammy. So nobody likes Sammy. He's the guy that Vince hates so much that he makes both the faces and the heels hate him. So backstage, the Street Profits are standing there in the exact same spot they were last week when Chad Gable walked up to them last week. Because again, he wants to apologize because Otis attacked him. Remember how I said that that Street Profits last week were the assholes? Okay. By the end of the night, they're not. But the beginning of the night, they were still. I'm sorry that Otis flew off the handle and attacked you guys. He's very overprotective of me. He thought I wanted an apology. I didn't. I'm fine. It's cool. So as a grand gesture of goodwill, I got our tag match canceled. So, you know, you guys don't have to worry about us beating you guys up. We're good. But wait a minute. We want our tag match. We know you can't control Otis, but we can, and we're gonna take care of him if he crosses the line again. Well, you insulted Otis's best friend and coach, and then when he came up to you to say, why did you do that to my best friend and my coach? You disrespected him. So of course he hit you in the face. Just saying. This is your problem. You're always joking around. Well, now you got yourself back into a match. So how about this? Which one of you two will be wrestling me tonight? And so Montez insists it'll be him. And how about this? I don't guess your goodwill. Otis won't be at ringside only if Angelo Dawkins isn't at ringside for me, for you, blah, blah, blah. So that's that. Jay goes up to Roman in the back and says, hey, so where's Jimmy? Says Roman. Well, he's out. He's there. If you want to see him, you got to go to our locker room. He says, you have a locker room now? Wow. He's doing me. He says he and I have the same question. Why would your brother do this to you? Put you in the middle. Make me the bad guy. That's not right. Okay, fine. You know what? Why don't you go tell your brother that I'm coming? He's more menacing when he's smiling. It's a good touch. I like it. Hey, remember last week? how Carmella and Liv Morgan had a match. Carmella is now insisting on calling herself the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. Well, they had a match this week. And last week, Carmella won. Liv got in, like, all the offense. And then Carmella, like, hit a drop toe hold or something and went directly into the code of silence and won. So, Liv looked the best in the match by far. Carmella was able to win with one move at the end. And then she forced Greg Hamilton, the announcer, cajoled, asked for Greg Hamilton to announce her as the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. So last night, they have a match again. But this time, Carmella gets in all the offense until Liv Morgan gets in one quick move and secures the victory. So you got 50-50 booking, but beyond that, in both matches, one person looked great but lost. And then the next match, the other person looked great but lost. And then, even though Liv Morgan won, Carmella makes Greg Hamilton, asks Greg Hamilton, to announce her, and still, the greatest, the most beautiful woman in WWE. So here's the deal. Liv Morgan won, but whose music is playing at the end of the segment? Carmella's. Because she asked the announcer to give her another announcement as the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. So Liv doesn't get over, even though she won that match. Because the most important person, who is it? It's Carmella, because she gets to tell the announcer what to do. Also, she doesn't get over either because she doesn't give a shit that she lost. Because wins and losses don't matter in WWE. The only thing she cares about is being recognized as the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. It's fucking shallow as fuck. I lost this match. But it doesn't matter that I lost as long as I'm still the most beautiful woman in all of WWE. Why should we care? Why should we care what happens next week when they have a match again? I'm glad Liv Morgan got the win. She looked like shit in this match. She didn't look like shit. She was doing her job. She was beating. She was getting beat up, and so she was selling. Good. But she got in zero fucking offense until she got one, her little move, her little weird, like, flatliner thing off from, she bounces off the second. It doesn't fucking matter. It's a stupid little move that she does. But she did it, and she got a win. Good for her. But they can't give Carmella and Liv Morgan time to have an 8 to 10 minute match where there's a story told within the match. There's only enough time for one person to get their shit in. So let's have the person who eventually wins the match be the person who takes all the heat. Why would you do that? I'm happy Liv's on TV. I'm happy they didn't abandon her after they released her best friend. But Carmella has said she doesn't enjoy the stupid character that they're having her play. And she's doing it. She's trying her best. But I mean, really? Really? The most beautiful woman in WWE? That's all, folks. because I feel like, I don't know, we'll have to see on Monday. We'll have to see on Monday, won't we? We'll have to see on Monday what they're going to do with Eva Marie, but it sure feels like if they have her work heel, which I'm not convinced they will because they're fucking tone deaf as fuck. If they have her work heel, I feel like this is the gimmick, right? Look how beautiful I am. Don't you want to be like me? Like that could, that's the way you go if it's a heel run, right? Is that the same fucking gimmick as this Carmella shit? Like when you boil down to it, like they're incapable of doing anything different ever. Blah. Oh, boy. So, Bailey does Ding Dong Hello. She's got her set's better, she says. And Seth Rollins comes down. He goes through the door. And she says, thank you for going through the door. He says, well, that's what it's there for, silly. And so it's two smarmy heels blowing smoke up each other's asses. And this is supposed to make us want to see them lose more, right? I mean, that's the idea, I'm assuming. All I saw online was nonstop praise for the segment. It was fucking nails on a chalkboard to me. Like, you're talking about mind games. It's not mind games. Like they looped Bailey laughing. And that's supposed to be mind games to be played with Bel Air. And the thing about it is that you might say, well, maybe it worked. Maybe Bailey knows something we don't. And there's a traumatic event in Bianca's past where she was bullied, because that's the only thing they could fucking know how to do, baby faces. Baby faces were all bullied. I'm not saying that's what they did, because obviously they didn't do it, but that's what they normally do. They made Braun Strowman into a guy who got bullied. They're probably going to do that with Bianca too. But perhaps, you say, Bianca had a traumatic event in her past where everybody laughed at her, and Bailey somehow knows about it. So she's using that laugh to get under her skin and play mind games with her. But so this would be one thing if they were doing it in front of fans, guys. If they were doing it in front of fans, it'd be one thing. But they're not. They're doing it in the fucking Thunderdome with the goddamn canned crowd noise. So all the fans, are booing Bailey and Seth. Boo. We don't like you. Boo. It's all fucking canned. We have no idea what this is going to play like, because this could be fucking crickets. Or everyone could laugh because they think these guys are so hilarious. Everybody, I fucking swear to God, everything I saw online about this segment was like unending praise. It's fucking... WWE has made me hate the sound of laughter. So they laugh and laugh and they laugh uncontrollably. Laugh, laugh, laugh. Oh, it feels so good to laugh. Laughter's the best medicine. Laugh, laugh, laugh. Laugh. Well, if you thought that was good, watch this. And then she shows a replay of Rollins beating up Cesaro. And there's this moment of tension. And this is why I honestly believe that Bayley and Seth are really great performers. I really believe that. They are asked to do fucking unconscionable, stupid fucking shit. And they have to do it. But at least they find occasional moments to make it fun. The moment after Bayley showed Seth Rollins beating the fuck out of Cesaro, she turns and looks at him. He's staring at her. You don't know if he's going to cry or be angry. And then he gets a smirk, and so does she, and then they start laughing again. And I feel like that's not something that Vince put in the script. I feel like that's something they workshopped themselves, asked if they could do it, and they got the okay. Because otherwise, I guarantee you, Bayley shows Seth the video of him beating up Cesaro. They laugh some more. That's what the fucking script said. But they made it tolerable because of that. Then there's another doorbell. So they're like, oh, well, did somebody order some food? Is there a surprise? Well, how about I'll be the gentleman. I'll answer the door. And they open the door. It's Cesaro. Remember how last week I said Cesaro was going to come back next week and beat up Seth? Well, that's what he does. He rips his suit, tears his pants off, throws him out of the ring, destroys the set some more, and then throws the plant. There's a house plant as part of the set, and he throws that. And then remember how I said, "Hey, maybe all this laughter from Bayley has really gotten to Bianca." Like she's haunted by this thing that happened, perhaps. And so the laughter is really, the mind games are working. These mind games. Mind games are only mind games if they have an effect on somebody. And after this thing happens, Bianca appears at the top of the ramp with Bayley at the bottom of the ramp. And Bianca laughs at Bayley. So all the laughter has no purpose other than to be annoying. It's not in aid of anything. Nobody's getting over or being affected by it. It's not a tactic that Bayley is using to try and help her get a victory over Bianca. It's just a thing that Vince thinks is funny, so he's having them do it more. Who cares? Who cares is the main theme of WWE. Who cares? So, Ray is interviewed. Dominic's hurt. Roman Reigns hurt my boy viciously. So Ray says that he's going to call out Roman. That's basically what he says. Roman claims to be all about family, but look how he treats his own family. Now he's going to hurt my family, but now he's messing with my family. So I'll be in the ring. So if you want, I'll show what a family's supposed to look like if you'll show up in the ring, says Rey Mysterio. So then we get a pretty good match, actually. Probably the best in-ring stuff of the night. Is Gable versus Montez Ford. These two guys are super talented. Just one of the things that Gable does in matches with Ford, where Ford will like do like a, I don't know, a spear or something over the top from the outside, from the apron, but like use the ropes to like spring into the ring directly into a Northern Light suplex from Gable. It's pretty great. Otis is cheering Montez from backstage, cheering him on. Watching on the TV. And I mean, these two guys are so very, very good. It's a match where it's the one match I would say watch it. It's the one match from last night I would say watch the match. While Dawkins is watching from backstage, Otis comes up from behind and beats him up, throws him into a road box. And we only got a glimpse of it. But occasionally, I'll slip while trimming the beard, you know, getting the cheeks. I'll slip with the old trimmers and carve a big old chunk out of the jawline area of the beard. Like, ah, fuck. Now I gotta trim the whole thing into a goatee. Oh, darn it. Or one time I just absentmindedly shaved off the mustache. It's like, what? And now I'm walking around like a fucking Amish guy until the mustache goes back. So, like, I understand. As a fat guy, as a bearded fat guy, as a man who it would take more than one hand to count his chins, I know what it would look like if I were to lose the beard. It would be a horrible sight. So I understand the pain that Otis is in. He must have just fallen asleep in the barber chair, and the barber must have thought that he wanted a clean shave, because he came out clean shaven, and yikes! He looks like Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It is not a good look for Otis at all. We see more of the match, and then Ford's going to go to the top for the frog splash. Ford covers, but Gable has to kick out because Otis is too slow getting to the ring. I don't think Gable's supposed to kick out. So there's a DQ. Otis beats the hell out of Ford, just destroys him. Just really destroys him. And then Dawkins limps out, and Otis rocks him, tosses him back to the floor, and then does a huge splash and then a giant Vader bomb. They're now saying that and this is, I'm sure, kayfabe, but they're saying that Montez Ford has like broken ribs and torn intercostal cartilage or something. Otis clean shaven is a sight to behold. It must be intentional, but why? Like, I'm fine with it if you want to like trim the beard. His beard was always kind of bushy. I like keeping the chin a little bit more full, and then, you know, keeping the jawline maybe a little bit more trimmed. That's my own look. Just the thing, this is the way I've decided to go with it. If you wanted to like get it down to like a Bobby Roode length of beard, I wouldn't have a problem with it. That might work. This, though? Mm-mm. Do you ever see the old Dick Tracy movie from 1990? It's actually, I think, it's one of the best movies of its era, and nobody thinks of it. The use of color in that film, and lighting, music, it's a fucking great comic book movie. But it's like Warren Beatty plays Dick Tracy. It's very, very odd. It's a vanity piece from Warren Beatty, who directed it, stars in it, and makes himself into like the biggest badass in the history of cinema. So it's kind of funny. But the villains are all taken directly from the comic strip. So the villains have very elaborate prosthetics on their faces to make them look much more cartoony. There's a guy named Flat Top who's got like literally a flat, like his head is a damn cube. There's a guy named Prune Face, and like it's the most wrinkly face you've ever seen in your life, right? There's a guy who's very, very briefly appears in the movie. The character's name is Little Face, and it's the biggest fucking head you've ever seen. Teeny, itty, bitty, itty, little face. That's what Otis looks like. Like, his head is ginormous, and his face is so small. Like, his face. I'm not talking about the face, like the oval that is your entire face. No, I'm talking about if you just look at the features. Like, his eyes are so close together, and his nose is very, very short, and his mouth is very, very small. And like, you put it all together on the size of his face. I'm just saying, you got to grow the beard back, Dozer. Like, it was a good look for you. This is not. I feel bad for the guy. I've played parts on stage where the time period doesn't allow for a guy to have a big bushy beard. The character wouldn't have that. So you got to shave your face. And oh my God. I know of what I speak. I feel bad for the dude. I also feel bad for anybody who thinks that this fucking thing with Shinsuke Nakamura and Baron Corbin. So, last week, Baron Corbin won the match and tried to abscond with the crown, but he couldn't. He was tackled, and the crown was returned to Shinsuke Nakamura. And this week, who the fuck cares what happened in the match? Why? How could you possibly care? Nakamura wins through some roll-up kind of thing, a counter or whatever. So who cares? Corbin drops Nakamura with a punch or whatever after the match, and they Boogs, who's still out there, runs over to try and race Corbin to the crown. But Corbin gets it, and he knocks down Boogs. But Nakamura grabs the crown off of Corbin's head, and then Boogs throws Corbin over the announce table, and he joins Nakamura in the ring, and they do air guitar and shit. And Corbin goes into the office of Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, and he's like, "This is my property. It's not funny. How would you let him steal my crown?" This is an adult human being, adult man. I demand, as your king, that you order Shinsuke Nakamura to give me back my crown. Well, Sonya laughs in his face as she should. Here's the deal, people. When I hear like people who are like, well, you can't do Alexa because, you know, the Alexa Bliss storyline, because it's not believable that she would have a doll that's possessed by a demon. Yeah, I know. It's not believable. Yeah, I agree with you. You know what else isn't believable? That Baron Corbin, an adult man, would believe he is an actual king because he won a King of the Ring tournament almost 2 fucking years ago. That's not believable either. None of this shit is believable. Except for the Roman Reigns storyline. How about Nakamura versus you? You've each won 2 matches against each other, so it's best of 5 now. Game 5 next week. Nakamura versus Corbin with the crown on the line. So they're literally going to wrestle over a plastic toy crown. Like, it'd be one thing if it was like, I don't know, if Corbin, delusional as he is, used his own money to go out to have a commissioned, real-looking metal crown with, like, jewels inset into it. That's my property. You stole my property. That cost me thousands of dollars to get done. I believe I'm an actual king. I am insane. But I have used my actual money to buy myself a crown. That shit that they're fighting over looks like it came out of a school play. Roman goes into the Usos locker room. He tells Heyman to leave, so it's just the three of them. It's a good scene, guys. It's a really, really good scene. I don't care about your title, says Jimmy, because Roman's like flashing it around. I care about what's inside. I care about him, and I care about you. Like, this is, we've been playing these games since we were kids. One day you're going to go to the Hall of Fame. But not as Roman Reigns, but as a spoiled bitch. And Roman looks at Jay and says, look how he's acting. What are you doing? And Jay yells at both of them. And Jay says, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. He leaves. Little piece of business. As somebody who's also directed plays. The shot is, you're looking at the shot, okay? From the left of the screen is Roman and Paul and Jay enter. And Jimmy's here. When Roman tells Paul to give me the title and then leave, Paul goes back the way he came, leaving through the left of the screen as you're looking at it. When Jay, who's in the middle, says, I can't do this anymore. I gotta go. He walks toward the camera and diagonal toward the right of the screen, which means there's a second exit somewhere behind the camera. This is one of those things where I just wish WWE would create a convention where there are cameras set up in every room that people are in. For the broadcast, because like it's just such a weird fucking thing. Like, there's a camera right there. There's a camera right there. It's not done in a cinematic way. Like, it's done. Obviously, there's a camera right there. So I don't know. I always hate the way the camera is literally right in your face as you're having this very, very important heart-to-heart talk. be a lot better if you didn't know the camera was there, or you know there's a cameraman there. Like, hey, come here, I want to make sure you get this. Something like that would make it so much more believable. So Jimmy yells at Reigns, you're like, you know what? Let's fight. Let's do it. Let's box, you and me, right here, right now. I don't care anymore. Let's do it. And this is where Roman is a fucking master. You want to fight me? For what? You think I want to fight you? I don't want to fight you. We're not little kids anymore. This is a family business. This is our livelihood. This is not how we make our decisions. This is not how we should be representing our family. Why would you do this to your brother? You're putting him in the middle of this. You're the older brother. Yeah, you're twins, but you came out first. You're the older brother. You should be looking after him. I should be able to depend on you to look after him. This is all about us. The only way I can get this done is to be the best each week. All I know is how to be the best. It's really good. It's a really good monologue. Why would you treat your brother like that to get him in the position where he's all completely screwed up? Just turning things around on Jimmy, and Jimmy is there, and Jimmy, it works. It works. It works on him. Jimmy has elevated himself the whole year, beating big matches, and you just let him walk out like that? He's obviously conflicted. Help your brother. Make it right with him. And Jimmy does. Reigns completely manipulated him. It worked. Masterfully done. And I believe that it would work on Jimmy in that moment. Because there is nothing so disarming in an angry argument when somebody says, "You want to fight? Let's fight." And you say to them, "I don't want to fight you. Why would we fight? That doesn't make any sense. Let's talk about this." Like, most people are going to be like, oh, shit, yeah. No, I don't want to fight you. Like, most people are going to, like, at least be taken aback by somebody. Like, you feel like when you say you want to fight, you expect the other person to go, "Yeah, let's fight." And when they don't, it makes you go, "Oh, what am I doing then?" And if you have that opening as a master manipulator, you can tear away at all the other shit until you have them in the palm of your hand. The last half hour, the last 20 minutes of the show is just Roman Reigns being amazing. Because then he goes down the ring, Rey Mysterio is out. And like, "Come out, Roman." And then Roman goes down there. And "If this is what you want to hear, I acknowledge you. I acknowledge you for the rat bastard that you are. I acknowledge you for the rat bastard who put your hands on my son. I'm willing to fight even if I lose the fight. And I want to fight you inside Hell in a Cell." And Roman's like, "Oh, jeez." Like, I love that Roman's immediate reaction to Rey challenging him to a match inside Hell in a Cell is, "Oh, man, I don't want to have to kill Rey Mysterio." Like, that's his honest reaction is like, "Ah, damn it, I didn't want to have to. Now I gotta kill Rey Mysterio, man. Damn it!" Like, it's that's a nice, honest reaction. So Rey goes off screen, like he tosses the mic. It's like, now it's your challenge. Now I've laid out my challenge. It's your turn to acknowledge me. He tosses the mic at Roman. Roman doesn't pick it up. So Heyman hands Roman another mat. Now, Ray went off screen, right? And Ray says to nobody on screen, and it's a fairly wide shot, I acknowledge you as a father. And then Ray attacks him with a kendo stick. And not from behind, not from the side, from directly in front of Roman Reigns. And Ray doesn't move that fast anymore. Like, there's no believability, remember? There's no way that Roman didn't see Ray get out of the ring, go to wherever he had stashed the kendo stick, pick up the kendo stick, and climb up the steps and get back in the ring. There's no way he didn't see that. It was such a sloppily executed moment. Like, you're gonna, like, he couldn't have hid that in the ring ropes, or I have no idea. So he starts swinging at Reigns. And now Reigns, it should be noted, he's wearing a tracksuit with a t-shirt under the tracksuit. The kendo stick is fucking light. It's bamboo-ish, right? I've seen big dudes snap them over their knees. Those things splinter all the time. It's not a sledgehammer. The thing about a kendo stick that hurts the most is you can swing it really fast, and the little slats of it, they give you lacerations all over your skin, which really sting. But if you're wearing a tracksuit over a t-shirt, it'll develop it'll develop some welts, I suppose, right? But it's not nearly as bad. I'm saying this because I saw a lot of, look, Roman Reigns just shrugging off a kendo stick beating, though they're making him into Invincible Roman again. Rey Mysterio is the size of Roman Reigns' thigh. I don't care how hard he's swinging that kendo stick. It's not going to do much damage, especially when he's wearing two layers of clothing. Wallace Koalas in the chat. Thank you, Wallace. Saying that somebody threw it in the ring at Ray's feet. I didn't see that. But if that's the case, who's helping Ray? And as Wallace says, why doesn't Roman pick it up instead? I don't know. So, Ray grabs the stick and, Reigns, Roman grabs the stick, drops Ray with a headbutt. Reigns goes for a power bomb. Ray's able to fight free with kendo sticks to the head. Now, Reigns sends him to the floor. And Ray comes right back in, but Reigns hit him with a Superman punch. I was going to do a spear, but then Dominic comes in. I thought Dominic was hurt. I thought Dominic was hurt so badly, said Ray. Ray, you're a liar. You're a liar. You told me that Dominic was hurt, but he wasn't. So then Dominic tries to hit some kendo stick shots. They're bad because he's not a very good wrestler. So Reigns blocks it, and he goes for a powerbomb, but he doesn't just go for a powerbomb. He sprints across the stage, across the ring, and yeets that motherfucker 15 fucking feet out of the ring. Now, the way that they filmed it, you can tell, obviously, that it was pre-taped and a crash pad or something was that particular moment. Later, they go back to a shot that shows Dominic writhing in agony with no crash pad around him, but who knows what happened in the meantime. Dominic just, he got murdered. So Rey attacks Reigns. He gets thrown out. He goes to check on his kid. I wanted Roman to do the same thing to Rey. I hope this match at Hell in a Cell is 3 minutes long. I hope from the time they start lowering the cell till the time it lands is a longer amount of time than this match. It is the only way it's believable. Believability. This Roman Reigns, this guy, the guy that you just saw murder Dominic Mysterio, they're going to have to give up the tag titles now because one of the guys in it has been murdered. This Roman Reigns, the guy they've been presenting for the past few weeks, since he started winning matches on his own, this guy against this version of Rey Mysterio, not the guy who became champion 15 years ago, this Rey Mysterio, no way. In Hell in a Cell, no. I will allow Roman 5 minutes because he's toying with Rey. This shit should be lawn dart into the side of the cell, spear, guillotine. And that's it. Of all the people he's faced as a champion, this is the least believable of anybody who could beat him. I mean, make it a handicap match at least. Make it a handicap match. Have tiny ass Rey Mysterio and his dipshit kid who can't wrestle, both of them against Roman. Roman should still win that match in 8 minutes. They haven't built any credible, believable babyface challengers to him. You're getting to a point where we're gonna creep up on a year. SummerSlam will be a year since he's been champion. He's just gonna waltz through everybody until you do the work to build the challenger. And I know the rumors about SummerSlam. Cena ain't beating him for the title. So then you got to start over again. You should be doing the work right now to build the guy who beats him. I think that guy could be Big E if you do the work to build him to that point. You haven't done that yet. Perhaps you might have. If that feud had been really hot between him and Aleister Black, but whoops, wouldn't you know it? Aleister Black never existed. Roman Reigns should never sell any offense from either tiny ass Rey Mysterio or his dipshit son who can't wrestle. Not one maneuver. Not ever. Not the guy that you've created. That's your fault, WWE. So we're going into Hell in a Cell, and they made this match out of the fucking blue. There's no storyline involved. There's no... I mean, there is now. The last 2 weeks have given you a storyline. They build shit for the pay-per-view over the last, like, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe. Hell in a Cell is a goddamn blow-off match to a huge feud. And it is in one case. It, Drew and Bobby Lashley, thank God, is probably going to be a big-time blow-off match. Done. No more. We'll never see them again. But this is a joke. Roman Reigns, this version of Roman Reigns, the guy that you have created, versus this version of Rey Mysterio, Proud Papa, and that's basically it. It ain't, that ain't it. That's just not it. They're not, they don't know how to build anybody to be a babyface in any way. It's really kind of sad that there should be, at any point, when you have, when you put a title on a guy and he keeps it for a year, he's a heel champ who keeps the title for a year because he's not losing the belt at Hell in a Cell. He ain't losing it in July at whatever the fuck it is, Wrestle Extreme Mania rules. He's not losing it then either. And he's not losing it to John Cena at SummerSlam. That ain't happening. So it's definitely going to be a full year that he's the title. The last, let's say, 3 or 4 months of that year-long title reign, year-plus long title reign, as a company, you owe it to yourselves and the people who watch your program to have no fewer than 3 or 4 credible challengers that are out there booked by winning matches versus other people. There's nobody out there. There isn't. The reason you had to do this fucking match with Rey Mysterio is because there's nobody else for him to wrestle. He beat Cesaro. Beat him clean. Why should Cesaro get another title match? He shouldn't. I love Cesaro. He shouldn't get another title match. I mean... Is Edge going to come back in the fall? Edge versus Roman finally gets a one-on-one match? Fine. You didn't have to do some work to build Edge to that point where he's going to beat Roman. Big E can be that guy, but you got to start building Big E to be that guy. Otherwise, risk treading water, people. I'm very high on the Roman Reigns character, and the storyline that involves the Usos is very compelling to me, because there are still at this point 3 or 4 different ways that thing could break. Is Jay and Jimmy rejoining forces alongside Roman, separately from Roman. Jimmy gets a match with Roman. Jay versus Jimmy, and the winner gets to be in Roman's stable or whatever. All that kind of stuff. There's a lot of really cool things. But it is very funny to me how they just keep slotting in guys who... I love Cesaro, but he's just a guy at this point. He's just a guy that doesn't really, never got built to be that challenger to Roman. They had a great match, man. They did. They really did. And you move on to the next one. But there aren't enough of them. You're not building them right. if here's the thing, here's the fucking thing, man. If you said to me, Roman is going to be champion for a year, starting in SummerSlam 2020, and we're going to take the belt off of him at SummerSlam 2021. And you tell me, I've got a year to build the guy to take that thing off of him, and the crowd goes nuts at the SummerSlam venue, and you tell me I got a year, I'll build that guy. Matter of fact, I'll let you pick the guy, and I'll build him. But you had no interest in that, WWE. You have no interest in that. I could have built Chad Gable. Give me 5 months, and I could have built Chad Gable to be the guy to beat Roman Reigns for that fucking title. Heel-ass Chad Gable currently. You have no interest in building anybody to do anything because you do not care about storytelling at all. It's not even it's just a thing to tread water in between contracts that you guys get from the Cock or from Fox or from USA Network. Just think fed water. I want WWE to be so much better than it is. I want it to be good. It is not good. Roman's great, though. That was SmackDown. This has been Alex Pulowski's Sour Graps. One thing that... It's an old saying. Not that old, but it's an old saying. Proven true, though, this week. When dealing with an alpha, it's very true. The big dog yeets first. Everything else sucks.